Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Monday, the 23rd of January, 2011. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on The Voice, KVOI, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. And our simulcast partners, our friends in Globe, listening to us on KJAA AM 1240. In Douglas and Cochise County, it's KAPR AM 930. We stream the show live at buckmastershow.com, also streaming live here on the radio station at kvoi.com. And there are three places where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere. My website, buckmastershow.com, the TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service, and the TucsonCitizen.com. We're live Monday through Friday, noon to 1. We'll get things rolling with the Monday political face-off. One of our two teams of commentators, each considers they are the A team. Commentators today, John Munger and Vince Ribago. 30 minutes past the hour, water expert Sharon Megdahl will join us, talking about the big conference on the future of Arizona's water supply, which is getting underway today at the University of Arizona. Plus, a real estate boom for planets in our solar system. Where have all the planets come from? We'll ask Dr. Mark Sykes of the Planetary Science Institute about that to close out the show. We encourage you to join us at any time. The Buckmaster Show live line is 790-2040. You can email questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. Monday is our political face-off featuring commentators John Munger, Tucson attorney and former Republican candidate for Arizona governor in 2010, and Vince Ribago, 2010 Democratic candidate for Arizona Attorney General. The face-off is sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. Moe's and Gallery is located at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. Well, in a two-minute video message to her constituents, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords announced her decision yesterday to resign this week. Here's the audio from that video.
Arizona is my home, always will be. A lot has happened over the past year. We cannot change that. But I know on the issues we fought for, we can change things for the better. Jobs, border security, veterans. We can do so much more by working together. I don't remember much from that horrible day, but I will never forget the trust you place in me to be your voice. Thank you for your prayers and for giving me time to recover. I have more work to do on my recovery, so to do what is best for Arizona, I will step down this week. I'm getting better. Every day, my spirit is high. I will return, and we will work together for Arizona and this great country. Thank you very much.
Gabby Giffords with the announcement that she will be resigning. Let's begin with Vince Ribago. Vince, did this catch you by surprise? It caught a lot of people by surprise, including Jeff Rogers, the Democratic Pima County Democratic Party chair. Jeff said it creates what he called a, quote, kind of bizarre situation since there will be a special primary and a general election, those two campaigns this spring.
Well, I think what caught me by surprise was that it was a complete resignation. I think I was suspecting that eventually she was going to say she wasn't going to run, just to give herself enough time to heal. But at the other, on the other hand, you know, she's been making extraordinary progress. So, you know, I think everybody was sort of waiting to see what was going to happen. So, you know, the decision, I'm not sure if it was, you know, in part medical, in part political, as to, you know, the immediate resignation, which I suspect will come probably Wednesday morning, if not transmitted by letter after the State of the Union tomorrow night, because I believe that's her last official congressional act that she'll take, and appearance will be at the State of the Union address. And so it does set off this unusual set of circumstances where we will have two races in a very short time period. So we'll be looking at an early April primary.
Mid to late April.
Yeah. That's right. And and then maybe a June 5th.
Early June, probably.
Primary, more or less.
June, early June general election.
Correct. Yeah. And then you have to go at it again, you know, for the primary and the general again. The one difference, though, and this is what makes it sort of unique, you know, we are in redistricting time, so to speak. And you know, the current race that's going to begin, the special election, is going to be under the old map. It'll include more of Cochise County. I think it's a little bit...
more
Republican voters. And then, assuming the maps eventually are approved and everything is approved, then I think the split is a little bit more even all the way down the line, 33 Republican, 33% Democratic, and then 33% Independent, more or less.
John Munger, some of your thoughts. Did this catch you by surprise?
Well, it absolutely did. And I commend Gabby for making this move. And I thought it was a lovely two-minute clip. She is a lovely lady. She is a lovely lady. I think I agree with Vince that it caught and you that it caught everyone by surprise. And now we're going to have two campaigns, and they're going to be hard fought, and they're going to be a number of people coming out of the woodwork on both from both parties. I know that you know, Frank Antonori, Dave Sitton, possibly Jonathan Payton, possibly some others on the Republican side. I don't know who the D's have out there. I've heard
the ACC commissioner from Cochise County's name has also surfaced.
Yeah, Paul Newman.
Paul Newman.
You know, who knows if Paula Bowd is going to step in, or Steve Farley. Vince will have more information on that. But, you know, it's a real opportunity for us to there's been so much political change in the past couple of years, and it's an opportunity for the district to really have a discussion of what kind of congressman we want to be sending to Congress, issues like really solving the deficit problem, putting out tough proposals to solve the deficit problem, to try to get the Obama administration out, to create some jobs. You know, the failure to approve the Keystone pipeline project
from Alberta, Canada, into this country. Yeah.
We haven't had a budget in this country for 3 years. Believe it or not, the Democrats have been operating this country without a budget now for 3 years because of the failure of the democratically controlled Senate to pass a budget. The opportunities here to put somebody in office who really has an agenda to create jobs. The president has not offered an agenda to create jobs or to cut the budget and
solve
the deficit.
So it's an opportunity.
It's a wonderful opportunity
for both parties here. We heard some names on the Republican side. Vince, we've heard Paula about, Steve Farley, Dr. Matt Hines, all serving up in the legislature. Who else? Who are you hearing on the Democrat? How about Jonathan? Well, Jonathan Payton be on the Republican side.
But. Yeah, there's a lot of names floating, but I do have to first agree with John that she was definitely an extraordinary public servant. She's going to be missed tremendously, both her drive and dedication to Arizona, Southern Arizona in particular, but of course the whole country.
And she could very well be back for some other office.
Absolutely, if not this office or some other office. You know, it's a question of healing, and if that's, you know, what she wants to do and she's ready to get there, congressional campaigns, both to run the race as well as to serve, are grueling. You're back in D.C., you're traveling back and forth to the district, and so those are grueling jobs. They're very difficult. And so I think it's a health-wise, it's a good choice, I think, for her recovery to get there, to get to that point where she can, make further decisions about where she wants to go. But assuming she gets there and is ready to do it again, there would be an outpouring of support for whatever office she might. Before all this had happened, she had been spoken of certainly as a likely contender for the U.S. Senate seat. Now we have, obviously, Dr. Carmona, who's running on the Democratic side for that. But, people have talked about in the future, perhaps governor even. Right. So if she were to recover to the point where she feels that she can do it, then, I think the sky is the limit, frankly.
Give us another couple names here.
Well, I've heard that some of the names that you've seen, those have been mm-hmm. bandied about to some degree in the newspaper. I heard a rumor that fighter pilot Jeff Lattis, who had run and lost to Gabby in a primary when she first ran, that he was thinking about running. If I recall correctly, there was also talk during the John McCain senatorial race last time. There was talk of Nan Walden, a business owner from Southern Arizona, Pecan.
Green Valley rancher,
and who's held significant positions, not in an elected capacity, but significant positions on Capitol Hill in a number of settings, and certainly she has the business background, and one would think perhaps the resources to bring to fruit in this kind of a compressed campaign, because you've got 90 days.
Once the
race gets called on Wednesday morning, which is when I believe it will happen, and the governor actually says, okay, this is when the dates are going to be, you not only have to spring into action, you have to get your signatures, you have to be able to raise those kinds of funds.
Yeah, you're talking big money.
Talking big money, and it's going to be a real disadvantage for people who don't already have a campaign organization. And I think that somebody like Anton Ori Sitton, Jesse Kelly is another one who has an organization. Jonathan Payton has an organization. I think that those people are going to have a significant advantage because they've got the organization and they've got the fundraising capability to make it happen. I think the disadvantage the Democrats are going to have is I don't know that they have anybody out there that has that kind of organization and fundraising capability. I think Nan Walden might, in terms certainly of the fundraising. Whether she has any kind of organization, I don't know. Paul Newman might, but we'll have to see.
Well, certainly I tend to agree. You do need an organization. You've got Paul Newman. And then in their own districts, whether it's Paula About or Matt Hines or Steve Farley, they actually have pretty significant organizations that are out there. So I definitely would not discount any of those. Those are, have been working tremendously hard serving their constituents, and they're well known. And they can their jurisdictions do cover big parts of the district. So they also would have an edge as well, although not necessarily having run a congressional campaign like some of the Republican names that have been mentioned by John.
12:18 on the Buckmaster Show. Let's take a break here. We'll be back with our Monday political face-off right after this.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Hi, Meg. I see you're cleaning out the garage.
Not exactly. I'm trying to find Grandma Lynn's clock, for what it's worth.
For what?
What's it worth with a Z? It's an antiques appraisal fundraising event on February 12th at the Doubletree Hotel. You can bring in two items, have them appraised by those famous appraisers, you know, you see on TV.
Famous appraisers?
Yeah, you know, Colleen Fesco, Michael Flanagan.
How much does it cost and what can I have appraised?
A $60 ticket, woman, admits two people and you can bring up to two items. You can bring furniture, jewelry, china, rugs, paintings, whatever. The proceeds go to help children in need in Tucson.
Where can I buy tickets?
You can buy your tickets online at whatsitworth.org. That's what's it with a Z. Wait, where are you going?
I'm going to find my two items for What's It Worth. I love Michael Flanagan, and it's for a good cause. See you there.
Proceeds benefit Assistance League of Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives. Expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain and Marana, and on the web at VeroMorePizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
It's the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by family-owned and run Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing since 1985. They specialize in custom frame mirrors, art for your wall, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at the Interior Design Center at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. We have John Munger with us and Vince Rabago. They would say they are the A-team on the Buckmaster Show. Of course, we have two teams of commentators alternating every other Monday. Both of these gentlemen, seated to the left and to the right of me, have run statewide campaigns, and it wasn't done, John Munger, your campaign for governor, overnight. I know that took a lot of work and traveling all over the state. So now you've got somebody jumping into this thing.
Well, to give your listeners an idea, for the 2010 race, I started running in May 2007. Now, that was a statewide race. But it takes a long time. The public only sees you for the last 6 months, 8 months of the campaign, but you're out laying the groundwork. And we were talking during the break. I think all of us agree that existing name ID in this short time span here, where you've got 60 to 90 days to run this race, that is not enough time to build name identification, name ID. And so, both parties are going to need to field candidates who already have name ID. That is to say that people know who they are. They have a general idea where they're coming from. There's not going to be adequate time for some obscure candidate to come out and either build the name ID, the organization, or the finances necessary to run that campaign. So this is going to be somebody we've all heard of, I think, on both sides. Yeah, there will be the obscure candidates, but they have a distinct disadvantage in running this campaign.
I would tend to agree that name ID is going to be a factor. Another factor is going to be your organization, which we talked about. I think a third and probably one of the biggest factors is going to be resources. So if someone either can, you know, with either individual wealth or can quickly amass the kind of funds needed to get their name out there quickly, that will be really a top-tier type campaign. And then the last aspect, and we hadn't talked about this yet, is whether or not Gabby endorses someone. I mean, that could be huge. Typically, endorsements, you know, they're important, but they don't win or lose campaigns. But this is such an unusual set of circumstances, given what has happened.
That if she gives her blessing to one of the candidates in the primary,
correct, and she, you know, she could. Even help a candidate by acting in an independent capacity. I believe that's permitted.
I agree that would be. I agree with you also that endorsements generally don't influence a whole lot of people. In this case, that might be unique. I would venture to bet that Gabby won't. If there are multiple D candidates, she won't endorse any of them, because if her endorsed person doesn't win, it makes her look bad. Why should she do that? It also makes her look like more of a statesperson if she doesn't endorse. Mm-hmm. You'll note that Jim Colby really did not endorse when he left. And I would bet she's not going to endorse. I would bet that she's going to try and stay above the fray, because she can only lose with an endorsement. She can't really win anything with an endorsement. She can only embarrass herself by having the person she endorsed not win. And I just, if I were her, I would not endorse. I'd try to stay above it. She's done a fine job of being a statesperson in this very difficult position, and I bet she's going to keep that.
And I'm just not sure. I'm not sure. I'm not gonna bet one way or the other.
No, I don't know.
Just because we're in such an unusual set of circumstances here.
John brought up the issue of Rosemont Mine. That could really be one of the marquee issues in this campaign.
John mentioned that when we were off air, when we were talking about other names, and you know, I don't think so. I know Gabby won, and she won overwhelmingly. I believe had expressed opposition to it. There's Republican opposition to it. You've got Ray Carroll and others. It's the opposition that is to it cuts across all parties, and it's growing. And I know there's been surveys out there, you know, because right now that entity is spending significant sums of money, to convince the public to support it. And certainly anytime you're spending a lot of money to support something, support goes up. I mean, that's natural. That's natural. But I think in the course of a campaign, people are going to be looking hard at the candidate. They're going to be looking hard at who's going to represent all of our interests. And kind of circling back to how we started, this goes back to what are they going to do in Congress? How are they going to push the American agenda forward? I didn't say this at the time, but I had to disagree with John, President Obama's performance and that, you know, this candidate's going to be needed to get him out of office and all this other stuff. You know, the reality is you're going to be looking at someone who cares about Southern Arizona, has the experience to get the job done, someone who can be a consensus builder on some issues, not all, because you have to take a position on some things where you can't necessarily reach agreement with everybody, and someone who's going to take the interest, like Gabby did, of this district to heart always.
Quickly running out of time, John, a few seconds.
Well, I think Gabby, she obviously did oppose the Rosemont Mine, and I don't think Rosemont will be the major issue. I think this issue will be fought primarily on the issues of having somebody who will support deficit reduction, and I'm talking about major deficit reduction, a jobs agenda in the country. And who is not tied in too closely to President Obama, who I don't think is going to do well in this next election.
Gotta go, John.
All right.
John Munker and Vince Urbago, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Monday Political Face-Off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery. Moe's specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your wall, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's is located at Fort Lowell and Dodge in the Interior Design Center there, moesgallery.com. We will be back talking about water supply as Arizona has its centennial. Stay with us.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords has been spending some time today with the other survivors of that shooting rampage in Tucson a year ago that killed six people and wounded 13. Doctors say a stroke suffered by Illinois Republican Senator Mark Kirk has affected his left arm and leg and some facial movements. They say that part of his skull was removed today to alleviate pressure on his brain. The FBI has arrested a refugee from Uzbekistan at Chicago's O'Hare Airport on terrorism charges, accused of planning to travel overseas to fight on behalf of a terrorist group. Updating Wall Street, the Dow is down about 18 points, 12,702. The NASDAQ is off 4 points. The S&P 500 index currently unchanged. More details at srnnews.com.
Do you? Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastropub.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded in 1930 by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn still sets the standard for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. The Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. The Arizona Inn has again been named one of the best 500 hotels on earth by Travel and Leisure magazine, the only hotel in Tucson to receive this top honor. And the Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson at 2200 East Elm and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Well, 34, this is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster, the home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice, 790-2040, 790-2040. You can join us anytime on the Buckmaster Show live line if you have a question or a comment. for any of the guests on our program. Well, a major conference on the future of Arizona's water supply got underway this morning at the University of Arizona. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is Dr. Sharon Megdell, professor and specialist in agriculture and resource economics and soil, water, and environmental science at the University of Arizona. Dr. Megdell is the director of the Water Resources Research Center, which is hosting the two-day conference along with the Morrison Institute for Public Policy at ASU. Dr. Megdell, Sharon, how are you today?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks.
It's good to talk with you. The name of this conference is Urbanization, Uncertainty, and Water, and I think that's a huge topic as we prepare for our centennial, and now we look ahead to the next 100 years. What do you hope to have accomplished at this meeting?
Well, it's very important that we share what we know about the future in terms of water demands, the growing state, where people may be, and the water supplies, and look at what the challenges are and what the possible solutions are. And recently there has been a few reports that have come out, the Watering the Sun Corridor report from the ASU Morrison Institute, the report from the state legislature's Water Resources Development Commission, and a third report that are all looking at the future. And so what we thought would be a good idea would be to bring people together and talk about these reports and what they've found and what people's ideas are as far as the challenges and opportunities to manage our water resources for the next 100 years.
What are some of these reports saying? Let's begin with the ASU report from the Morrison Institute. That report was called Watering the Sun Corridor, Managing the Choices in Arizona's Megapolitan Area. And it's interesting because just last week, We had one of the vice presidents from ASU talking about this whole Sun Corridor concept from an economic point of view. What was the takeaway message from this report?
Well, I would say the takeaway message is that we have choices to make. You know, that our state is projected to grow. This Sun Corridor region that includes Tucson actually goes south of the border, but for the purposes of this report really is looking at Pima, Pinal, and Maricopa counties, is projected to grow. There's a lot of developable land. And while it's not going to be impossible to provide water for these millions of people who are projected, it is going to require some choices that are going to have to be made collectively. We have established water rights and water users, and people will have to understand the implications of alternative choices.
You wonder about, is there going to be enough water? I think that's the question that those of us who are not intimately familiar with the area like you are, but we ask, is there going to be enough water for future generations in this state? And I think that's the key question.
Well, that is the key question, and I'm often asked the question, are we running out of water? And my typical answer is, which I think is accurate, is no, not for the people who are already here. But when we look to the future, a number of people have projected gaps in available or known supplies versus demand, and then it's up to the communities, the water users, to figure out how to eliminate those gaps. And for example, I mean, just some quick examples is, I think all of us can do a better job conserving water. I know I could. I'm not a big water user, but I could probably use some less. A big, big question, and this is a very controversial question, is how do we use our treated wastewater in light of the technology available to treat it to very high standards? Do we want to have the cities try to buy out farming and so forth? These are all choices that have to be made. They're not necessarily cheap ones or easy ones, and they're not to be made only by the water managers. They have to be made by all of us living here.
That report that came out, I think it was the Grand Canyon Institute, Arizona at the Crossroads, Water Scarcity or Water Sustainability. What was the conclusion from that report that was done by Karen Smith?
Well, that takes a look, I'd say it's a little more specific and maybe farther reaching than some of the others and some of the policy changes proposed, because that in particular talks about modifications to state law to incorporate environmental water needs, to look at more market-based approaches to water allocation, and looking at the financing. So it kind of bit more into the specifics and proposed some things that would require some changes to state law that aren't always the easiest to get.
I think we worry also about not only the scarcity issue, but we worry about, as consumers, what is the cost of water going to be like here in the Tucson region?
Yes, cost is always a concern, and it's very interesting to me that I see people of two minds on this, or maybe more than two minds, but I hear many, many people saying water's cheap in Arizona. We're in the desert. It should be more expensive. Yet if there are proposals that result in higher rates, there are a lot of protests to that very often. But I believe there's no question that as we grow and as we make more use of technology and so forth, there likely will be increases in the cost of treatment and so forth. And again, those are choices that we're going to have to look at. Do we treat through one technology or another? Do we use more rainwater harvesting and gray water systems at the home? Lots of choices to be made.
You wonder, are people willing to use treated wastewater? I know it's been used in Southern California extensively, but it can be a very hard sell.
Yes, it is not an easy sell, but yes, yet they are doing that in places like Southern California and other places in the world. And in fact, people are doing it without even knowing it, in the sense of our whole system of rivers and everything. There are discharges from wastewater treatment plants that go into rivers to water that is used downstream and then treated. That happens here in the Colorado River. Las Vegas discharges its wastewater into the Colorado River, and guess who's downstream? Arizona.
While we have you on the line here on the Buckmaster Show, and we're speaking with Sharon Megdahl, who is heading up at the University of Arizona, the Water Resources Research Center, what are you hearing about flows on the Colorado River? We had a very wet December here in Tucson, but I don't know how it is going up in the Colorado River Basin.
Well, interesting you should ask, Bill, because just this morning across my email came an article about concerns regarding low snowpack, because what really determines the flows on the Colorado River will be the snowpack up in the headwaters area and certainly north of here. And apparently, and I haven't even had a chance to read the whole article, the snowpack thus far has been limited. And so there's a real question, you know, we have to see what occurs over the next couple of months. But it looked like some alarms were being sounded for at least this winter. And remember, no one winter of good or bad snowmelt and snowpack will basically eliminate or exacerbate the problems we've had, because we have had a long-term drought. We had a very good winter last year. Remains to be seen what this year will be.
I assume you have not taken a position on the Rosemont Mine and the water quality issue, Sharon?
No, I haven't, and I'll tell you what I tell people very briefly, and that is, The law allows Rosemont to utilize water. So I talk a lot about, you know, our framework for water management. And so from the quantity side of things, the law is very clear. And I think the law is also clear about the water quality of discharges and so forth. But I do have to say I haven't looked that closely at the water quality implications. But from the water quantity side, the law allows it.
The EPA has rarely stepped in. I think they've only stepped in 13 times since 1972 on a water quality issue concerning a mine. So even though they have voiced some concerns about Rosemont in the preliminary hearing phase, it's difficult to say whether they would actually take action.
Yeah, that's not something I can really say anything about.
Right.
But, you know, the thing that I would say in the context of our future and planning is that we do have to take a look at the various demands for water, for people, for food and fiber, for industry, and including the mining industry, which is a significant part of our economy. And it's not just for the Rosemont mine that we see interest in more water use for additional mining, and, of course, the energy industry.
Tell us briefly here as we wrap this up about your resource center there at the University of Arizona. What is your mission?
Well, our mission is really to promote the understanding of critical state and regional water issues. And our activities are varied. We do a lot of applied research including research on environmental water needs and transboundary aquifers with Mexico and rainwater harvesting. We do education, particularly we house the Arizona Project Wet Water Education for Teachers program. And what I think is very noteworthy about our center is that we really try to involve the public and a broad spectrum of water stakeholders in just about everything we do.
Sharon Magdahl, we'll look forward to talking with you again. Thanks a lot, and good luck with the two-day conference at the University
of Arizona. Thanks so much, and thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Sharon Magdahl here on the Buckmaster Show. What's going on with all these planets that are being discovered in the universe, that solar system of ours? We'll find out. Dr. Mark Sykes waiting in the wings. He joins me in studio as we continue with the Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it, but let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit pyramidfcu.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencium and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
It's 12:49. It is the Buckmaster Show. Well, the more astronomers look for other worlds, the more they find that it's a crowded and crazy cosmos. They think planets easily outnumber stars in our galaxy, And they're even finding them in some of the strangest of places, and they've only begun to count. Three studies released this month in the Journal of Nature and at the American Astronomical Society conference demonstrate a real estate boom in our solar system. One study shows that in our Milky Way alone, most stars have planets, and since there are a lot of stars in our galaxy, we're talking maybe 100 billion planets. Dr. Mark Sykes joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Sykes is contributor for the Buckmaster Show on space exploration. He's CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary as a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. He chairs the NASA Small Bodies Assessment Group and serves on the Planetary Science Subcommittee of the NASA Advisory Committee. Mark, good to see you.
Great to be here, Bill.
Well, serving now on the Small Bodies Assessment Group, you're going to have so many small bodies of planets to study. It's unbelievable. What's going on? Why are we now discovering all these planets?
Well, because there's some great telescopes up there like the Kepler Observatory that's watching these objects pass in front of stars and so sees them slightly dimming the starlight. So we have an instrument up there finally that's very good at finding planets. And like our own solar system, you know, we have a bunch of planets in our own solar system, 8, and depending on how you count planets, maybe 15 or so, maybe more. And so just multiply that to all the stars in the galaxy. Because when stars form, it's not just the gas that comes together and form the stars, but there's all this other garbage around that accrete into debris around that star and that form planets as a consequence.
And there are no stupid questions. You know that when I sit down with you. So, okay. So maybe 100 billion planets. Do we know how many stars there are in our solar system?
One.
I mean, in there. Oh, how about, okay, there I go. There, I should learn not to ask such stupid questions. I meant to say in the Milky Way.
See, and that's an answer I don't know, but it's on the order of probably tens of billions if they think there's 100 billion planets.
But it is safe to say that when we were in school, we learned that there were just really the planets in our solar system. We didn't really know about other planets.
Back in those ancient times, there were talk about like a possible planet around Barnard's star and whatnot back in the 60s. But nothing was really demonstrated to be there until the mid-90s. And where kind of modern techniques of detecting small variations in the star motion due to the planet pulling on it as it orbits began to reveal the existence of these other objects. I mean, we've known they were there, but it took a while to verify it.
And when you talk about planets, of course, everyone wonders, well, if there are all these planets out there, Mark, Dr. Sykes, what the heck, what about life? What's the possibility?
The possibility is getting better, I would say.
It would seem that way.
Well, and we're learning.
Chances are better.
And we're learning, we're trying to learn what is necessary for life. And, you know, right now we're searching for the water. You know, we're going the water trail because that's essential to life on the Earth. And as we find water elsewhere in this solar system, if we end up finding life in that water, then that begs the question of, well, if we find water in these other worlds, other places in the galaxy, then maybe that's a location where life could exist as well. So life may turn out to be a very common phenomenon.
On my list of questions for you as I prepare every month for your visit, of course, Mars has been in the news. This was kind of interesting about these 15 pounds of Martian rock collected recently in Morocco that fell to Earth during a meteorite shower last July. I didn't realize there really isn't that much Martian rock on Earth.
Well,
that we know about anyway.
Right.
Something there's like 240 pounds total.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's only been, I think, five falls since the early 1800s that the rocks from those falls turned out to be from Mars. We found other Martian meteorites down in Antarctica. These meteorites were basaltic. They were volcanic in nature. I mean, what people are really interested in is finding sedimentary rocks from Mars because that's, again, the life question where we'd be looking for the conditions and evidence for life.
So this in itself really isn't that exciting, these rocks.
Oh, it's always very exciting when you bring something back from Mars. There's people that want to spend, you know, tens of billions of dollars to bring back something even smaller amount, but it'd be more carefully selected.
What happens to these discoveries? Do they wind up at universities for research or what?
Some of them will be winding up here in Tucson at the Gem and Mineral Show. Yes, yes. I was just told today that I've got some people that'll be going down there hoping to purchase some of the rocks from that specific fall.
Wow.
Some will end up at the Smithsonian. Some will end up elsewhere. But there will be rocks for sale as well. They won't be cheap, but they will be available. And studying even basaltic rocks, it's volcanism under different conditions in the earth tells us something about the processes and the history of this our neighbor planet.
Got a question for you on the Buckmaster Show live line for Dr. Mark Sykes. We're going to be going to Robert, who has a question. Go ahead, Robert. You were Dr. Sykes.
Oh, thank you. Because of the delay, I may have heard you answer this question. I'm not sure, but how is it you're certain that the objects found on Earth actually originated on Mars?
Good question.
Yes, it is a good question. I think typically that you look for trapped gases within there, and you are able to relate them to the composition of the Martian atmosphere, and so that's a typical way of relating it to Mars. Plus, now we have many more rovers and things on the surface taking detailed mineralogical elemental composition of the surface, then we can make linkages that way as well.
And I'm curious. You said those rocks probably won't be cheap at the Gem and Mineral Show if they do turn up. Just curious, when you say not cheap, what would something like that roughly perhaps go for?
I was told this morning by I don't know if it was a reliable source, maybe 50 times the price of gold.
Wow. Wow. We'll have to postpone getting the checkbook out for that one. Quickly, other story I wanted to pick up on, now that we are not doing the space shuttle flights running cargo up to the International Space Station, NASA's having to rely on private entrepreneurs, huh?
Well, it's nice to see that door opening up. We're relying right now on the Russians primarily, and other partners. We have some new companies that
company about SpaceX. SpaceX.
Yes, that has been developing the. I think it's the. Is it the Dragon?
Mm-hmm. The Dragon. The Dragon that, spacecraft
that is preparing to go and to test the docking with the International Space Station. So, but actually, we've had companies building rockets and things for many years. Boeing, Lockheed, other companies. But these have been more independent development processes than processes that have been guided by the agency or other government agencies.
Can we generally say that NASA is looking more and more to the private sector for this type of thing?
I think they're looking anywhere they can to. This is good because we're expanding our capabilities and the breadth of services that are going to be generated by our companies.
Planetary Science Institute celebrating its 40th anniversary. A quick thumbnail sketch of what you all do.
Well, as you said at the outset, Bill, we are. Space explorers. We study the solar system around other stars. We do field work around the Earth, the analogous sites that we might find on Mars, from Namibia to the outer Australian outback, Canada, Hawaii, South America, theoretical work. We kind of do it all.
And it's good for Tucson.
It's great for Tucson. We bring in millions of dollars a year into the community, provide high-paying jobs for people with advanced degrees, and it's well, it's a lot of fun.
All right, Dr. Mark Sykes, we'll look forward to your visit with us in February. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay. Coming up now, 12:59 on the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants. Anybody looking for a CPA? Yeah, lots of people as the tax season starts to crank up. We strongly recommend Michael C. Flowers, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. He's the guy that can answer all of your tax questions. Not only is he a top CPA, he's a great guy as well. That's going to do it for the Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show. We will be back with you noon to one. We're here Monday through Friday live on KVOI, The Voice, AM 1030. We hope you have a great afternoon. See you tomorrow.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.